Every human will probably have a sore throat one day in their life, and it will most likely resolve on its own. But what if I told you that this sore throat could lead 20 years in the future to a debilitating cardiac disease where blood flow is obstructed in the heart? That sounds absurd, but it is exactly what is happening to millions of people worldwide every year. Today, our patient has mitral stenosis. And you are the doctor. Welcome to The Internet Work, a podcast written by medical residents meant to serve you better on the wards and on call. Today's episode is titled, When Life Closes a Door, An Approach to Mitral Stenosis. The mitral valve is composed of two leaflets and separates the left atrium and the left ventricle on the left side of the heart. In the normal heart, the mitral valve opens during diastole to allow the filling of the left ventricle. During systole, it remains closed and remains in position thanks to its attachments to the papillary muscles through the chordae tendineae. Mitral stenosis is defined as the obstruction of blood flow across the mitral valve from the left atrium to the left ventricle. The majority of cases of mitral stenosis are caused by rheumatic heart disease, where a molecular mimicry-mediated autoimmune reaction causes fusion from the commissures of the mitral valve, thickening and fibrosis of the leaflets, as well as fibrosis and shortening of the chordae tendineae. It tends to cause mitral regurgitation in early disease, and stenosis later. Rheumatic heart disease is triggered most often by a Streptococcus pyogenes pharyngitis, aka strep throat. While the incidence of rheumatic heart disease has decreased in the industrialized world thanks to access to antibiotics for the treatment of strep throat, it remains prevalent in the developing world. Most patients with mitral stenosis are asymptomatic. They can develop symptoms at ages ranging from teen years to 70 years. The time from the onset of mitral stenosis to the appearance of symptoms can vary between a few years to a few decades. High prevalence areas tend to have earliest onset. Rheumatic mitral stenosis affects women more than men. Other causes of mitral stenosis include mitral annular calcification, where the valve's junctions with the rest of the heart become calcified, narrowing the valve's opening and limiting the movement of the valves. This is a degenerative process associated with advanced age. Mitral stenosis can be caused by radiation, or it can be congenital. This podcast will focus mainly on rheumatic mitral stenosis. Now, let us move on to the approach to mitral stenosis. The first step is always to assess for patient stability. Run through the ABCs, look at the vital signs. Once the patient is deemed stable, a thorough assessment can be done. Mitral stenosis has a long asymptomatic period. When it becomes symptomatic, mitral stenosis clinical presentation is nonspecific and can be seen with multiple cardiac and pulmonary pathologies. It can, however, be classified into hemodynamic, structural, and electrical changes. 1. Hemodynamically, there is prominent vascular congestion caused by the bottleneck at the mitral valve. Patients will report dyspnea and exercise intolerance, secondary to pulmonary congestion. As the disease progresses, the volume overload is transmitted through the lung, causing pulmonary hypertension, and ultimately to the right heart, causing right heart failure, manifesting as right ventricular or RV failure and tricuspid regurgitation. Once right heart failure is present, peripheral edema is exacerbated with lower limb edema and ascites. 2. Structurally, the left atrium becomes enlarged due to increased LA pressure, occasionally causing hoarseness of the voice due to compression of the recurrent laryngeal nerve. Lung vessels become dilated by pulmonary hypertension and vascular congestion, which can lead to hemoptysis. 3. Electrically, left atrial enlargement increases the risk of disordered electrical conduction, leading to atrial fibrillation. Patients may report palpitations or present with embolic complications such as strokes. tachycardia, whether caused by atrial fibrillation or physiological, is detrimental to the patient with mitral stenosis, since it reduces ventricular filling time and leads to worsening symptoms, and can even impair cardiac output due to the loss of supplementary preload provided by normal atrial contraction. On history, it is important to assess for precipitating factors of decompensated mitral stenosis, such as infections, myocardial infarction, rapid atrial fibrillation, or pregnancy. It can be useful to ask for a history of rheumatic fever, but patients might not remember due to how remote it can be. Some mimickers of mitral stenosis that should be kept in mind include other pathologies that can lead to mechanical obstruction of the mitral valve, like left atrial myxoma, large endocarditis vegetation, large left atrial thrombosis. On physical exam, cardiac auscultation might exhibit the following. These findings can be very subtle. An early diastolic opening snap is typical of mitral stenosis. A loud S1 due to the valve closing at a higher velocity because of a higher left atrial pressure. Low-pitched diastolic rumble from transmitral turbulent flow. An increased P2 due to pulmonary hypertension. An S4 due to RV hypertrophy, which could be accompanied by a holosystolic murmur of tricuspid regurgitation. Heart sounds can also be irregular if there is atrial fibrillation. Volume overload presents as pulmonary crackles or rails and as peripheral edema. Jugular venous pressure will also be high in the presence of fluid overload. In terms of workup, mitral stenosis is an echocardiographic diagnosis, but other tests can provide hints. On the ECG, there can be signs of left atrial enlargement, such as a bifid P wave in lead 2 or biphasic P wave in V1. The ECG can also confirm a diagnosis of atrial fibrillation. On the chest X-ray, left atrial enlargement can also be seen as straightening of the left heart border or an elevated left main stem bronchus. Pulmonary congestion is also seen with upper lobe vascular redistribution, increased intestinal markings, or pleural effusion. In the case of calcific mitral stenosis, mitral annulus calcification can be appreciated on the chest X-ray. Troponin levels should be ordered if there is a suspicion of myocardial ischemia. Echocardiography is the most important diagnostic tool for mitral stenosis. A bedside ultrasound can also be very helpful in identifying mitral stenosis. You can identify doming of the mitral valve during diastole, thickened valves, the parasternal short axis view can identify commissural fusion, left atrial enlargement, and using Doppler on the apical views will identify a turbulent diastolic flow through the mitral valve. Severe mitral stenosis is the most clinically relevant stage and is defined as a mitral valve of less than or equal to 1.5 centimeters cubed or a diastolic pressure halftime of over or equal to 150 milliseconds. This measure represents a prolonged time required for 50% decrease of the transmitral gradient. Left heart catheterization might be required in some cases for diagnosis and staging. Let's move on to the management of acute or decompensated mitral stenosis. As acute mitral stenosis clinical manifestations are nonspecific, and echocardiography is not always rapidly available, initial management should be targeted towards respiratory and hemodynamic optimization. Remember to always go through your ABCs. Pulmonary edema should be treated with diuresis and supplemental oxygen. Non-invasive positive pressure ventilation and rarely intubation may be necessary in severe cases. Nitrates should be avoided if there is any suspicion of right heart failure. Cardiac output and pulmonary edema can be worsened in the context of tachycardia, such as sinus tachycardia and atrial fibrillation with rapid ventricular response. Any precipitant should be investigated and treated. In the case of rapid atrial fibrillation, once the potential precipitant is addressed, rhythm or rate control should be attempted to optimize LV preload and reduce pulmonary congestion. if the patient was already anticoagulated on warfarin, or if a left atrial thrombus was ruled out with a transesophageal echocardiogram, cardioversion can be attempted, either chemically, most often with IV amiodarone, or electrical, with direct current cardioversion. Sinus rhythm is difficult to maintain in mitral stenosis patients due to atrial remodeling. Rate control is often a more viable option and can be achieved with beta blockers or calcium channel blockers. As for chronic mitral stenosis, management focuses on 1. Secondary prevention of rheumatic fever, 2. Symptom reduction, 3. Management of atrial fibrillation and thromboembolism prevention, and 4. Selection for valve intervention. 1. In patients with rheumatic heart disease, recurrent episodes of rheumatic fever should be prevented with long-term antibiotic prophylaxis, most often with monthly intramuscular penicillin G. It is to be noted that mitral stenosis does not require antibiotic prophylaxis for the prevention of infective endocarditis in the context of interventions like dental procedures. 2. For symptomatic management, dyspnea and exercise intolerance can be optimized with diuresis. Some evidence shows that rate control, even in sinus rhythm, can improve exercise tolerance. 3. Atrial fibrillation is very prevalent in mitral stenosis, in patients with mitral stenosis, and requires anticoagulation. It remains one of the few conditions for which vitamin K antagonists are superior to direct oral anticoagulants for stroke prevention. As mentioned earlier, rate or rhythm control can be implemented. 4. Finally, the underlying issue must be addressed by considering valve interventions. Such a decision should be taken in a comprehensive valve center involving cardiologists and cardiac surgeons with an interdisciplinary approach. Therapeutic options for mitral stenosis include percutaneous mitral balloon commissurotomy, PBMC, during which a catheter-mounted balloon is used to open the valve and separate the fused commissures, and surgical interventions which include commissurotomy or valve replacement. To be a candidate for PMBC, there must be an adequate mitral valve morphology, less than moderate mitral regurgitation, absence of left atrial thrombus, and no prior failed PBMC. A transesophageal echocardiogram is required in this context. The following patient population will benefit from valve intervention. 1. Symptomatic severe mitral stenosis. 2. Asymptomatic severe mitral stenosis could benefit from PMBC if they have pulmonary hypertension with a pulmonary artery systolic pressure of over 50 millimeters of mercury, or new onset of atrial fibrillation. And 3. Non-severe mitral stenosis can also be considered for PMBC if they display significant exercise-induced hemodynamic impairment on heart catheterization. Concomitant presence of other valvulopathies, such as mitral regurgitation or tricuspid regurgitation, and the presence of coronary artery disease, among other factors, play a role in the final decision. Decisions for valve intervention are complex and require the presence of a multidisciplinary valve team. To quickly touch upon the management of calcific mitral stenosis, PMBC is not an option, since calcific mitral stenosis is a problem of valve classification rather than commissural fusion. Mitral valve replacement is the definitive treatment, but due to advanced age and other cardiac or systemic comorbidities, patients with calcific mitral stenosis are often not surgical candidates. Furthermore, implantation of the new valve is often difficult due to the calcification of the mitral annulus. Conservative treatment with a focus on symptom management is often prioritized in calcific mitral stenosis. Rheumatic traumatic heart disease is a highly preventable, debilitating disease that affects at least 33 million people and causes over 300,000 deaths annually, in addition to disproportionately affecting resource-poor countries. In 2018, the World Health Organization reaffirmed its position on promoting global access to essential medications, such as antibiotics, with the goal of reducing the global burden of rheumatic heart disease. Thank you for listening to today's episode, entitled When Life Closes the Door, An Approach to Mitral Stenosis. This episode was written by Dr. David G., internal medicine resident, and reviewed by Dr. Murray Kornbluth, cardiology, and Dr. Samuel Mamane, general internal medicine. The Internet Work was created by Dr. Allison Lai and co-developed by Leah Karanopoulos and Zara Morali. Music production by Laxman Zavanth Mohan. If you liked this episode, please go to our website, theinternetwork.com, for an associated infographic. Thanks for tuning in, and we hope to see you again soon.